Hi, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Leadership and Management Book Podcast with Wally Bach and Art Petty. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wally, it's great to be back with you.
Yep, here's the second time, and we get to talk a lot of good stuff about good books that you can buy people for Christmas.
Our timing is just fantastic. Yeah, the holiday buy book. I had so much fun. I don't know if you had a theme when you were going through your books, but mine was, at least for three of these books, are, you know, give these to someone who's really motivated on their professional development, because they're literally my favorite holiday buys. These are keeper type books. How about you? What was the theme as you were going through your developing your list?
I just went back through, I was not quite as organized as you. I went back through the stuff I've read this year and the ones that I've either given away more or that are most likely to be good gift books as opposed to just good books to read yourself.
Okay. All right. So, good. Well, you know, like always, and I know we had a lot of fun in the first podcast. We look at the world through a different set of eyes and a different set of perspectives, but we have a lot of common views as well. So I can't wait to hear about your books. Where do you want to start off?
Well, I'm going to start off with the first book on my great books list for the year.
Okay.
And as with you, we've talked about this. These are the books that we've read this year, not necessarily books that were published this year.
Right.
Because the first book that I read that made my great books list was It Doesn't Have to Be Crazy at Work. And I finished that in January. I think it is a great book, but I think there are two issues to be aware of if you're thinking of buying that for someone else.
Okay.
The first issue, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm just going to say, what are they? You've got me curious now.
First problem is that this is a book written by two guys who run a company in Chicago, as it turns out. And this is great if you can implement a lot of the things. Many of the things here require company-wide implementation. And so not everybody can do that. You can still get lots of good ideas. You can get ways to adapt it. But if you are buying a book for somebody who wants to take an idea right out of the book, this may not be a good choice. The other choice, I think, is more critical. The guys who wrote the book are from a generation, though I hate using that word too much, that thinks that profanity is the way that you normally work. I don't work that way, and I try to keep a family-friendly blog and so forth. So if you're buying a book for somebody who doesn't mind hearing the F word fully spelled out and repeated, and BS but not the abbreviation, and so forth, if that's okay, buy the book. But if there's somebody that doesn't like that, like I am, don't buy the book for them.
Okay, so
buy them another book that's good, because all they're going to do is get angry at the language and not get the messages.
All right, so some good health warnings. They're a language warning. I suppose help me a little bit here. So why should someone be interested in It Doesn't Have to Be Crazy at Work? Is this someone who's potentially leading transformation? Who's the kind of gift recipient you envision this for?
Well, I think there's two. I think there's if I'm a manager, a boss, whatever, and I've got a team, there's a lot of ideas about how you can cut the nonsense out of the day and make people more productive. If you're a solopreneur, there's still a lot of ideas about how to do things, how to look at work so that you can spot the idiocies that we all do, and maybe get rid of a few of them. Pretty much anybody who's concerned with productivity, I think, can get something out of the book.
Okay. All right. Good. I like it. I'm intrigued. I suppose the health warning on language is appropriate. Now, remind me to talk with you about that generation issue on the use of creative four-letter words, because I grew up working in factories as a young kid with people much older than I was at the time. And they did amazing things with those types of words. They used them as every part of speech. They were nouns, verbs,
adverbs.
I mean, they hit it all. So I think it crosses generations.
My problem isn't with the language. My problem is with the language in a formal public presentation.
Okay.
Right. So I use a lot of that with the people that I talk to. And I came up in the trucking business and I was a Marine. So those aren't foreign languages.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're a Marine. That won't be the first time you heard some of those words, is my
nope.
guess.
And I spent 25 years working with police officers. So.
Gotcha. All right. Well, okay. My turn on this for one of my favorite holiday buys. From a personal professional development standpoint, this is number one on my list. And it happens to be a book called Just Listen. Easy for me to say. Just Listen by Dr. Mark Goldston. Literally one of the most important books I've ever encountered. We all attempt to communicate, right? We all don't succeed at it. What Dr. Goldston does is he takes us through what could be a lot of complicated brain science and psychology, and he eliminates the complexity pretty quickly and gives us some incredibly powerful tools to say, deal with difficult people in the workplace. I know just about everybody we know encounters them regularly. Tools to deal with sudden challenging verbal confrontations in the workplace. His brain reset process is worth twice the price of the book. And that is, hey, if you're suddenly in, dealing with somebody, maybe in a meeting, somebody's kind of jumping at you and your tendency might be fight or flight. Mine always was fight, and that got me in trouble. And a lot of my clients mentioned that they tend to withdraw from those settings. Dr. Goldston gives you a great tool for that.
Okay,
well,
how did it help you?
It helped me think through how to pause, that deep pause that's absolutely essential at that point in time when you're dealing with a challenging confrontation. And the other thing, I think the most valuable component out of the book was he expands upon the persuasion cycle or the persuasion process. His perspective based on psychology is everybody moves through a process of from resisting to listening to considering to doing to maybe glad they did. And so say you're approaching somebody in the workplace and you've got an ask, you've got what you think is a brilliant idea, a well-baked proposal, and their first reaction is, resistance, because they're obviously dealing with their own challenges and headaches and what does it mean for them and how might it impact them, and it's just something else. What Dr. Goldston does wonderfully is help us understand how to kind of guide without manipulating, but to guide people through that persuasion process. And really just breaking it down like that, chunking it out, is so incredibly powerful. So I love that part of it. And you know what the bonus is in the book? The bonus is he goes through so many common challenging communication scenarios that all of us encounter in the workplace. And he gives us tools built on using empathy, built on using that persuasion cycle, built on using just some good tools of psychology. So in case you can't tell, I'm really, really in love with Just Listen by Dr. Mark Goldston.
It sounds like a book for anybody who deals with other human beings.
You got it. Exactly. Yeah. And I've checked. Most of us are doing that in our workplaces. So highly recommended, particularly if you know someone who's just dealing with some tough characters or is in a really competitive environment, struggling to get along with people, struggling to get along with a boss, whatever it happens to be. Great stocking stuffer for sure.
So okay. Is it my turn now?
It is. Back to you.
Okay. My second book is Atomic Habits by James Clear. And the obvious question here is, since Amazon has got like 40,000 books on developing habits, why do you need another one? And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is, this is the most comprehensive book that I've seen about how to develop habits that you want and put them in play, how to not do things that you've made a habit of. In other words, how to back off that habit and do something else. It covers the waterfront. It gives appropriate homage to other people who've done good work, like the fellow who wrote I just blanked on the book, Duhigg from the Times, his habit book a couple of years ago, which was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's good about this is the book is really well done. There are lots of summaries. There are charts and things that make the message clearer, that get things across. So it's a kind of comprehensive thing. It's logically thought through, and it's presented in probably the best possible way. He may have read Goulston's book before he wrote it. I don't know that for
nice,
sure.
Nice. So yeah, I checked it out on Amazon before the call. It had something like 1,148 reviews and, you know, really positive ratings. So it's well regarded. It sounds like it's a good book for just about everyone in the workplace.
I think it is. If you are the kind of person who thinks about that kind of stuff, works at your productivity, tries to, you know, to make the most of your time and stuff, it's the best book on habit that I've read. And I think that's because he uses everything from the other people who've gone before, and nice. He gives them credit as he should.
Gotcha. All right. That sounds fantastic. So
your turn, buddy.
Okay. All right. This is like
I'm taking control here.
So mine kind of surprised me, only because I just finished reading it a few days ago. And it's a book that I approached and didn't expect to like, and I loved it. And I can't wait to actually read it again and begin to apply some of the tools. It's called 8 Steps to High Performance, and that's by Mark Efron. Just absolutely fabulous. Now, here's why I didn't expect to like it. It had that listicle sound, right? Here we go again, 8 steps. We in the blogging community are familiar with lists, aren't we, Wally?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, lists are popular. I struggle. I still write a lot of lists. I occasionally cringe that I do it. And I expect to find something a little superficial here. I didn't know anything about Mark until I picked the book up. Well, it turns out that Mark is absolutely maniacal, my term, not his, about getting deep into the research and deep into the science and not providing us with the fluff or even the experience-based ideas that we often come across, certainly in blog posts and articles and sometimes in books. So he calls it science-based simplicity. He spent a lot of time building on a book called One Page Talent Management, and he spent 7 or 8 years, and to his description, reading thousands of journals and viewing studies, and he distilled down high performance for all of us into 8 steps. And, you know, much like what Goulston did, I think Mark Efron did it even better here in 8 Steps to High Performance. He took away all of the complexity. He could have attempted to dazzle us with his deep research and all of the studies. This book is so clearly written and so concise, about 176 pages, with another 40 or 50 pages of endnotes if you want to dig in. And he made his concepts practical and usable for all of us right away. So I was blown away. I love this book, Wally. What a great tool to strengthen performance. And I love his simple, but not simplistic, 8 steps. So just great for anybody that's striving to get ahead. I do want to highlight one key component. He argues that the research shows that pretty much all of us, many people have about 50% of their potential already established. It might be IQ, it might be, you know, culture, upbringing, whatever, schools, that stuff is there. It's the other 50% that's the difference maker, and that's where he focuses his 8 habits in here, 8 steps to high performance. So just good read, and such a pleasant recent find for me. Give it to anybody that you know that's motivated to want to kick some butt next year in the workplace.
Well, let me back you up just a second. You said that you wanted to take issue with that you just said, the performance. What were you taking issue with?
Well, no, what I was concerned about was the label on the book. I didn't understand I was going to get into, who is it, Jeff Pfeffer, like, throw out all of the baloney and this stuff about performance and business has to be research-backed and reproduced through scientific experiments. I didn't realize how incredibly technical this was. So he was the opposite of a listicle type scenario. He just made it really simple and easy to implement, easy to grasp.
Yeah, well, that particular concern, I think, is with any of people like Pfeffer who come and say, well, you know, we must have evidence-based stuff. And that works pretty well up to a point, but you can't do some of the kinds of experiments to establish stuff among human beings that those people seem to want. So finding somebody who can do a good job of presenting what we do know and how the findings relate to doing work every day, I think is a great find. So thanks.
It's a good find. Yeah, you bet. I'm working right now to get Mark on my Leadership Caffeine podcast. And if you happen to pick up the book at some point, maybe we'll have a chance to dig in and talk and share perspectives on it. But Wally, it's one I recommend.
Okay, good job. My third one of the things we should give to other people is the one that you and I talked about on our first podcast. It's James Mattis and Bing West's Learning to Lead. And without sending people to the other podcast to listen to it, it's about Mattis's personal learning to lead. It's not a treatise on leadership or a treatise on leadership development. It's in the context of the U.S. Marine Corps and the way the Marine Corps develops leaders, which, as a former Marine, I happen to think is really good. And it's a very solid book in terms of pointing you to other kinds of resources.
You know, no argument from me whatsoever. I love that book. The podcast brings out what we loved about it and maybe just a couple of little nuances of what we didn't. But I think what a great gift for every emerging and aspiring leader.
Yeah, that's it. Do you have a third one for us?
I do. It's one that I did a solo podcast on the Leadership Caffeine show, and it's The Leader You Want to Be, Five Essential Principles for Bringing Out Your Best Self Every Day by Amy Jen Su. I had a chance to talk with Amy a couple of times. The first time because the recording or the internet connection dropped and we had to do most of the interview all over again. But Amy's written a book here that's just a treasure for anyone who is in that mode where they're running hard, they're stressed, they can't seem to catch up, they can't seem to do the things or find the time to be that person, that professional, and that leader that they want to be. And she admits in the interview, it's, you know, semi-autobiographical. It's something that she took a long time to come to grips with. She uses an interesting convention, leader A and leader B. And leader A is that leader that's got it all together and the one we want to be, you know, every possible day. And leader B is just that train wreck of overstressed, overtaxed, not at their best, you know, snippy and snapping at people. And just not there. And she, what she does is she actually goes into and builds and provides a framework. She calls it her five P's. Everybody has to have a framework. And that's purpose, process, presence, people, and peace. Really what she's doing in each of those particular components is offering some powerful guidance and exercises and activities to really do a better job with self-care, self-awareness, and what she terms personal agency. And, you know, I love it, the concept of purpose. It's a word often muttered. She actually reduces it to a mathematical equation and is a good consultant, a 2x2 matrix. But her mathematical equation is purpose equals passion. What do you really love to do? Plus contribution. Are you able to contribute at a high level? And she helps us with some instruments in the book to identify how much of our time is spent within that particular zone. It's just a good book. So here was my challenge with it. It's such a deep book. I recommend reading it from beginning to end once, and then going back and picking one of the P's, one of the sections, and just working on that for a personal professional development component for a period of time. Because I think there's so much to do and so much to think about in this book that it's something you can use for literally for a couple of years. It's not something you're going to read and magically say, aha, that's it. So powerful, useful. Anybody that's wanting to be better to, you know, as she says, to be that leader they want to be. What a great gift for them.
Yeah, and that I have it on my shelf because you have been so high on it. I'm following my usual thing about not actually reading any books until they've been out there for a while so that I can get out from under the hype curve. But it's definitely here. I'm looking at it as we speak.
Good.
And it's there because you told me it was a good book.
You know, it warms my heart, Wally, not only that you have the book there, but for years, you've actually been a budget line item in our family's budget here because of your reading and book recommendations. I'm thrilled to have you spending a little bit of your hard-earned money on my recommendations. So that just warms my heart.
Well, it's not the first time. That's all I'll say.
So what else do you have for us?
Well, I thought it'd be interesting. You and I both read books that aren't strictly business or leadership books.
Right.
And so when I was prepping for this, I decided, well, what are some of the books that I've read this year that aren't technically business books or leadership books, but were really good? And I've got two of them.
Okay.
The first one is David Brooks, yes, the New York Times columnist, book, mm-hmm. The Social Animal. And this is a really interesting book about an interesting subject done in an interesting way. It's an interesting book because it's about what it means to be human, how we react as humans, even when we think we might not do it that way. So one, his way of telling the story, which is the interesting presentation, means that he follows a couple through their life, where before they meet, the years that they're together, and finally till one of them dies. And that gives him a chance to talk about things like the effect of different chemicals on attraction, physical attraction, or the way that we make friends, or how we find work that's meaningful. Because it's in a story form, it's really good. It's especially valuable, though, because he footnotes so much of the stuff. So if you want to find more about things that you can do to find the right work for you, the perfect match for your talents and interests, you can read where it happens in the book, follow the footnotes, and read some original material. It's a really great book. Brooks is a great writer, and this, I think, is a culmination of probably a decade's worth of his thinking and writing about it in other forms. So that's my first one.
Wally, I have to tell you, I love that. Based on your description, I'm adding it to my holiday list around here. So I can't wait to read it. Sounds great.
Yeah, well, I had one more, which I'll dive into unless you want to.
No, go ahead. Why don't we knock through yours? I'm curious on your perspective. I see it on our notes here. So what do you have to say?
Well, there's got to be one really big, heavy book for me every year. That's not a rule, but it seems to be a practice. And this year, the book that I read was Neil Ferguson's The Square and the Tower.
Okay.
And, you know, fair warning, I am a Neil Ferguson fan. I like the way he writes and researches. I like the way he picks topics. I don't read all of this stuff. I'm probably not ever going to read his Kissinger biography. But this book is about the way hierarchies and networks shaped both business and politics from the 14th century on. And it is, if you know anything about Neil Ferguson and his writing, it is absolutely excellent. It is absolutely clear. And it's one of those books that you will put down more than once and gaze off into the middle distance while you try to sort out the implications of what you just read.
So history buffs in particular, or who's the audience for this?
I think this is, I picked it here because of the combination of networking, which we read a lot about and which he covers beautifully here, and also where he talks about some of the different theories that go into it. I read a couple of other books this year that supposedly looked at our new networked age and stuff, and they weren't nearly as helpful. So it's if you're interesting and you're willing to wrestle with a 600-page book. I mean, some people don't like 600-page books.
You know, I'm kind of a geek about that. I think I use that term about myself every week. The thicker the book, the more to it, especially if it's one you start to fall in love with when you're in it. The only disappointment is when they end. So, all right, I'm intrigued by that. I have not read anything by that author. I'm not sure why I've missed him thus far.
Well, he's got to write something that you happened to like at the time he writes it, I think.
Okay.
He did a great book on the history of money, which I picked up at that time because for some reason it attracted me, and I fell in love with it. Most of what I've read since then has been articles.
Okay.
So.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I appreciate both the author recommendation and the book recommendation there. So sound like two fabulous creative ones, not quite square in this world of leadership and management, but I agree with you. Both of us find a lot of benefit and joy from reading things outside of that genre. So my two fit that. The first one, and this gentleman's name, I apologize if I mispronounce his name. He's the physicist, Michio Kaku. And that name just throws me every time, but I love his writing. I love his work. I'm a closet physicist at heart. I really, really appreciate it. But what he wrote was The Future of Humanity, Our Future in the Universe. And I actually picked this book up driving to visit a client a few hundred miles away. That was within my range of darned if I want to go to the airport, I'll just drive it. And I continued when I got home, I ordered the paperback because I hadn't finished the audiobook, and I'm enthralled by it. It's so exciting. It's one of those, it has you almost on the edge of your seat. And here's what I like. He kind of blends science fiction with science fact, and he projects forward, and he's adopted the, I think that theme that so many of the billionaire entrepreneurs have, which is, hey, look, fundamentally, we need to get off this planet to ensure the future of the human race. And oh, by the way, it's not going to be that easy. But here's what the science says are the challenges. Here are some ways we might work through those challenges. And he takes us through this in stages, getting off the planet Earth, getting to Mars, terraforming Mars, getting out of our solar system, and so forth and so on. And it's just enthralling. It was, like I said, science meets science fiction, meets philosophy, meets hope. So my encouragement on this one is if you have people who love that kind of speculative nonfiction, is that a phrase, by the way, speculative nonfiction?
It is now.
Listen or read, and this one will definitely make you think and ponder. So that was my first one there. Any thoughts on that?
No, except that I'm a closet physicist myself. I actually started out in physics, and I think it was complex variables that got me.
Gotcha.
So what's your other one?
My other one is a little bit closer to home. Still a bit careerish in nature, not quite as far flung as The Future of Humanity. This is called Designing Your Life, How to Build a Well-Lived, Joyful Life. And the authors are Bill Burnett and Dave Evans. And these are two leading instructors at the Stanford School of Design. And apparently this book is based on a course that's constantly fully enrolled and oversubscribed at the school. And what they do is they literally bring design thinking to helping navigate a career. I love the statement, a well-designed life is a life that's generative. It is constantly creative, productive, changing, evolving, and there's always the possibility of surprise. And so what they do through this is they literally make you think using design principles. Curiosity, bias to action, reframing, awareness, and radical collaboration. And anybody who follows design thinking will recognize those terms. And one of the things I love is the reframing component. They quickly offer in the book, hey, too many of us spend a lot of time thinking about what it is we're going to do when we grow up, or what are we going to do with the rest of our lives? Forget that. Figure out what it is you're going to grow into next and focus on that. And of course, they give ample examples and tools. And this is one of those books that screams, gosh, I wish there were a workbook. Well, guess what? There's a workbook. So you can have the book and the workbook. I bought them both. I love them both. I think it's a great resource for anybody who's wrestling what it is they want to do next with their careers or their lives.
I'll tell you what I like about that. I like the what are you going to do next? I come from a generation of people who were drawing up life plans at age 17. And I was thinking the other night of all the people I knew from my early teens on who had a vision of what they wanted to do. I only know one person who actually did it that way. And
was it the guy,
you know, the rest of us kind of wandered from, you know, pillar to post, and we tried this and we didn't do that. We got the job of our dreams and discovered that it was really awful.
That concept that they give you there and in their approach to designing for Next is, it was liberating, Wally. It's suddenly like, oh my gosh, it's not as hard as trying to solve for this big equation the rest of my life. All I have to do is think about Next, and then I can do it again, and I can do it again after that. So it really was liberating and really was helpful. And the workbook distills it down to some practical, here's how you do it.
Well, I think that's the way to go. I think I have grandsons who are in that, you know, what am I going to do with the rest of my life phase. And I keep telling them, you don't have to plan it. Just take, you know, do the best you can where you are now, figure out what the next step is, go try a bunch of stuff. And I think the sociologists call it a sampling period.
I like it.
You don't need a plan. You need a sampling period.
Right. Right. Hey, so let's just do a recap for the audience. Wally, what were the three books from the leadership and management categories that you find as holiday best buys?
My three were It Doesn't Have to Be Crazy at Work, which I had some reservations about for certain people, Atomic Habits by James Clear, and Learning to Lead by Jim Mattis and Bing West.
Gotcha. And my three were The Leader You Want to Be by Amy Jin Su, Just Listen by Dr. Mark Golston, and Mark Efron's The 8 Habits of High Performance. How about your two where we cast a little wider net?
My two wider net ones were The Social Animal by David Brooks and The Square and the Tower by Neil Ferguson, both of which are excellent reads.
And mine were The Future of Humanity by Michio Kaku and Designing Your Life by Bill Burnett and Dave Evans. So I'm pretty confident, Wally, we've got some nice jewels and some fun books to unwrap for people in these lists here.
Well, I'm going to unwrap a couple of the ones you recommended for myself. I give myself a present, as it were.
Well, as always, it's great sharing ideas with you, learning from you, chatting with you, and I look forward to our next podcast, Wally.
You got it. See you in a couple of weeks.
Take care.